What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud 2 Titan. I have another special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and versatile musician who wears many hats in the entertainment industry. She co-wrote TV theme songs, Different Strokes, and The Facts of Life, which she also sings. She is the recording artist of the number one hit song, Friends and Lovers, and it still remains today as one of the top love ballads of all times. Please put your hands together and welcome singer, songwriter, actress, author, and speaker, Miss Gloria Loring. How's it going, Gloria?
I'm just wondering out there if they're actually putting their hands together. That's what I want to know.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
applause. Now, you're in Minneapolis, right?
I am, yes.
Oh, very cool. I went to junior high school in Minneapolis. My family was all from Minnesota and North Dakota, but we moved to New York. That's where I was born, in New York City. But I did move back there. We were there for about 3 years, and I liked Minneapolis.
Oh, I love it. It's home base for me. You know, I just kind of remain here, just kind of develop my own little thing here. So
good for you.
Well, Gloria, thank you so much for coming on my show and, you know, sitting down and chopping it up with me. You know, it's just an honor to have you on the show.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, the accomplishments that you've done, I mean, it's endless. We need two or three shows, you know, to bring out your full resume, so we're going to try to put it into one show.
That's okay. That's all right. Listen, you know, I've been doing it for a couple of minutes, so I got a couple of things that I've been involved in, so that's fine.
Oh, it's just phenomenal. You know, music is just circulating within your family, and those of you who are listening, her son is Mr. Robin Thicke. You know, the next big R&B hit star out there. I mean, he's got a lot of number one hit songs out there. Man, this is his mom, and she is a phenomenal musician. This is where he gets the talent from.
Well, there's a long line of music in my family. My dad was a musician. He was a trumpet player with Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey. My mom was a band singer for a little while and then gave it up to become a mom back in that time. But my dad's mother and all of her siblings were musicians. There was a child prodigy violinist. My dad's mother was an arranger, a big band arranger in the 20s. Her sister was a trombone player. I mean, it's really interesting. There's a whole lot of music in the family. And also, Robin's dad, Alan, has played guitar and written songs. And, you know, so he comes by it honestly. And he has certainly worked very hard. He has never taken anything for granted. By the time he was 14, he started working with a group, and they started singing and writing songs. And when he was 15, he wrote his 15 and a half, I think, he wrote his first song that got recorded by Brandy, and it wound up being on a triple platinum album. So, you know, I'm very proud of my son. I think you could hear that.
Oh, yeah. As with all mothers.
Yes, I'm proud of my son. Both my sons. I have two, so.
Definitely.
But music is, what a great way to spend your life. I mean, I was just talking today to a symphony orchestra down in South Florida, and we're talking about my going in and doing a big kind of Broadway tribute, and they have all this stuff in their library. I have a few things in my symphony library, and there's this challenge I'm going to, you know, get to do some new, or some things I've already known that they have arrangements of, but, you know, to step into a new challenge and learn some new songs and refamiliarize myself with a couple of other of the old songs. And what a joy. What a great thing.
It is. I'm just glad to be a part of the team also. I started music at a very young age. 13 and 14 is when I actually started recording and tracking and doing my own recording.
Like Robin.
Yeah, for one, I'm a number one fan of everybody. Aside from doing my own compositions, you know, I'm still a fan of everybody who I listen to that has timeless music, you know, which brings me to timeless music. Your track that you did, Friends and Lovers, I mean, that is a timeless song, in my opinion. And no matter what time frame that we're in, that song still has a place. It has relevancy. As a fan and as a musician, you know, I just feel it has a great combination of major and minor chords. And it starts with the major D, and then, you know, some of the changes go into the minor B chord progressions. And I think as a vocalist, you know, we need those type of changes and progressions just to give you more room to, you know, throw your riffs and things. How did that collaboration start?
Well, that started because I was lamenting the fact that I'd never had a hit record. And I was on Days of Our Lives, and all those years I spent as a singer, and I did so many, I mean, hundreds of television shows, and had some records out and all this, but I hadn't had a hit. And I was talking to my dear friend who was associate producer on the show, Days of Our Lives, and I said, this is 1985. And I said, you know, this is just terrible. I'm at the stage now where everybody thinks of me as a soap opera actress who sings, as opposed to a singer who became a soap opera, or an actress on a soap opera. And there's no way a record company's going to sign me now, because they're going to say, oh, yeah, she's an actress on a soap opera. And she said, well, how could it possibly happen? How could you have a hit record? I said, well, the one way it could happen, and I started imagining. Yay for imagination. And I said, you know, if I could just find a really great song and start singing it on the show, and if the fans loved it, and maybe it got tied into a storyline. So I started to imagine this whole situation where, you know, and then maybe if the fans wrote enough letters and there were enough phone calls and we got enough response, we do have 10 million viewers, maybe we could interest a record company. So the very next morning, she called me up to her office. She said, Gloria, come up here. I have a song for you. She had gone to dinner that night, and she happened to overhear with some of the staff from Days of Our Lives. They were talking, two of the people were talking about a song that had been sent into the show that they thought was really good, but they didn't know what to do with it. And Beth suddenly, her ears perked up, and she said, what song? I said, oh, this song called Friends and Lovers. It's a really nice song, and we're just, you know, we're not sure what to do with it or who to you know, have it connected to what themes, storyline. And she played it for me, and the first chorus ended, we could be both to each other. I turned the tape recorder off, and I said, Beth, that is a hit song if I ever heard one in my life. Now, within a few weeks, I started singing it on the show, and with a few weeks after, it was meant to be a duet. Somebody brought me a recording and said, we saw this great guy out in Santa Monica, and this guy, Carl Anderson, you got to hear him sing. And they played me his record, and I went, oh, my God, that's the perfect person for me to do this as a duet with. And so Carl and I got together. We loved the song. We went and recorded it. Now, it all sounds like it was really easy. It got turned down by every major record company in the industry. We sent it around with somebody who was really good, really knowledgeable, and we got back exactly the stuff. Oh, we're not doing duets. Oh, she's a soap opera actress. Oh, it's kind of a waltz. Oh, we're not doing this. We're not doing that. And finally, a little label called Carrere Records that was associated with Sony Epic that Carl was on, this little label decided to pick it up, this crazy Frenchman named Yves Desca. He changed some of the production a little bit, made it a little more ethereal, and it wasn't released until a year later from when we first recorded it and started doing it on the show. But what happened was during that time, I was singing it on the show every couple weeks or so, because it got tied into one of the storylines, and the fan mail was coming in, and we got a memo from NBC Publicity that said that song generated more fan mail than any song in the history of NBC television.
Wow.
And when it was finally released, it just took off. And it was unstoppable, and it went, and back then, they didn't have the system they have now. That song was on number one at every major station in every major city all around the country, and yet it only went to number two on Billboard, which was interesting. But it was number one which was like, excuse me, how could it be number one on every major? I mean, we were tracking Chicago, number one, New York, number one, Toronto, sure, number one, you know, all San Francisco, number one. We were tracking it, but it only got to number two on Billboard. I don't care. It was it was my hit record. You
right.
know?
Well, to be number two on Billboard, I mean, that's, you know, phenomenal.
That's still pretty good.
Right.
You know what? I'll take it.
Exactly.
So it was an exciting time and an exciting story, certainly.
You know, Gloria, you're no stranger to composition and hit songs and hit TV theme songs. Different Strokes and the Facts of Life are still probably sung by me, my family members, people that I know in school. I mean, it just goes on. It's just,
you take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of life. The facts of life. There you go.
Wow. In the flesh.
There you go.
you know, what I just feel that there's a difference to me of composing music for records and composing music for teen thieving shows and sitcoms. What is the formula that you use to separate the two? Because, you know, the arrangement changes. There is also a time that you have to, you know, abide by. And, you know, so what's the formula for, you know, adjusting the measures and bars? Are you using 8 bars for your verses, maybe 8-bar chorus? I mean, give me some of the structure and arrangements on those.
Well, first of all, you usually got anywhere from 30 to 60 seconds. So you got to get to your point real quickly. I have to give more of the credit for the structure of this of those two songs to Alan Thicke, who was my husband, and we collaborated with another writer on those songs. I think the main thing is from the moment it starts, it has to have a hook that grabs you right away. And Alan had written a lot of instrumental theme songs, so he knew about getting to, an immediate hook. And I think that's the main thing. From the moment it starts, you got to have something. I mean, you just think about it. You take the good, you take the bad. You know, right there, that's kind of a sing-songy kid kind of thing. Na 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 na.
Sure.
You know, so it right away it sets up a feeling of what you're dealing with. It's hard to say what exactly it is. But mainly you got to get to the point. You got to set up your imagery. And you got to set up a melody that immediately hooks people, I think.
I totally agree with you. You know, being a fan of music, and I'm pretty sure you are also, I mean, while I have our heroes that have kind of, you know, paved the way for us as musicians, who are your musical influences that really kind of wanted you to focus 100% on being a musician? I mean, who did you listen to and study? Because I feel there's a difference between listening and studying somebody as a musician.
When I started, my dad was a jazz musician, and rock and roll was just coming into view, but it wasn't the kind of stuff that the grown-up singers were singing, and my dad was playing at the house Peggy Lee. Ella Fitzgerald was a huge influence on me. There was another singer named Beverly Kenny, who unfortunately left us very early in her 30s. And she had a beautiful light touch, very jazzy swing. And so I really started out singing jazz and swing and that kind of stuff because that's what we grew up with in the house more than anything.
Sure.
And I loved it. And I, you know, my dad was listening to the big band stuff and Stan Kenton and all of that, and so that's where my ear was at first. I listened a lot to Peggy Lee because I had a light voice and not a really powerful voice when I was real young, and so I could replicate the simplicity and purity of her sound. So I sang along to her. Another one I sang along with a lot was, although I tried to, I couldn't always do what they did, was Lambert Hendrickson Ross, Annie Ross, who did Twisted and all those great, I mean, John Hendricks was amazing.
Sure.
So it really was the jazz influence. And when I started working in clubs, you know, there weren't, unless you were a rock and roller and had a band, for a young girl singer, it was still the standards. And, you know, it was just that crossover time, late 60s, early 70s, when I started singing. And so you had both influences. So the pop music was coming up, and I was doing the pop music, but I was doing the standards, too. So there were all of those influences. Well, the good thing is that I learned to sing jazz and swing. I mean, I can swing. but then I learned the pop music, and I learned how to sing. I mean, I learned to lay back and swing with something and back phrase and all of that and sit in the pocket. But then I learned to sing right on the beat with pop songs. So that has served me very well, and that's the reason I can go out and I can do symphony, but I can also record pop, and I can record the kind of stuff, you know, that not quite the R&B Robin stuff. I mean, he's really, really honed himself in that, and that's now in his bones and part of who he is.
Yeah.
But I can do stuff that has soulful tinges and bring my heart into that.
Definitely.
So that was really a great upbringing. because, you know, it's kind of like not quite as extreme, but kind of like an opera singer being able to sing jazz. I mean, they're two, pop and jazz are two very different kinds of, were when they started, two very different kinds of approach to the music.
Yes, it is. You know, I'm a big fan of jazz. I listen to, as a keyboardist, you know, my heroes are George Duke, Herbie Hancock, Chick Corea, you know, so it just, the list goes on and on. Oscar Peterson, of course. And, you know, it's a different genre. But, you know, I felt that, you know, being in the jazz environment, listening to that, it was easy for me to translate over to the R&B and the pop world just because the foundation is already built there. It's just, you know, a little easier progression. You're more or less dealing with minor and major chords and pop and R&B, you know. But with jazz, it's such a diverse...
jazz, you got all those ninths and elevenths and God knows what, you
seven,
know, and flatted
right.
this and...
right, exactly. You know, suspended.
Stop that and flap this and...
I mean, it's pretty much make up your own stuff in jazz, you know, when it gets into the improv stuff, so...
yeah. But what I love is the synthesis that's been going on. And, you know, the people who've been gradually bringing, well, Herbie Hancock has been incredible at that, bringing the R&B, the jazz, the pop, bringing the blues. I mean, it's wonderful. It's this wonderful mashup of different elements that make for such a richness. And yet I love the purity. I mean, when you listen to one of the old great blues masters, the purity of that is just great. I'm loving the mashups too.
You know, you've been recording a long time, Gloria, from an analog world, I'm sure you started, and merging over to the DAW world of recording. What system are you tracking on now? And, you know, give me some pros and cons of, you know, your preference these days.
Well, there's something about, you know, I've been listening to some of the, what's her name, Eva, can't think of her last name, who died unfortunately of cancer, and then all of a sudden her records hit. She sold hundreds of thousands of records, and she, everything she recorded was analog, and oh my God, you just hear the breath, you hear the flesh, you hear the, you know, it's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I use, I mean, I've got a beautiful AKG C12 microphone, which is this beautiful mic, and I've got like the French tube preamp, which helps.
Sure.
But I'm using digital performer, and I just got my little Apple set up, and I sit at my desk because I don't try to record finished vocals. But for me, it's getting the track in there and getting to sit down and record and listen back and record and listen back. And it's an education problem. I don't like that vowel like that. Oh, I want to add a little darkness. I want to brighten that here. I want to, you know, it's that playing around and really hearing yourself. I think when I finally, gosh, over 10 years ago, got my own little in-home studio and started to record on mic, it changed everything about the way I sang.
It
completely revolutionized the way I sang. I learned the power of breath, of more space, of more cheeks, of more and less pronunciation. Whereas when you're performing on a stage and you're entertaining, there's a tendency to want to reach the back walls.
Yeah.
and so there can be just a certain kind of singing, but you hear it in the people who have not only performed live, but more of their recording has been in the studio. You know, the Streisands and the, you know, they bring so much of the breath and the depth and warmth and width of the voice into what they do. Whereas the people who are just, you know, singing kind of headbanging music, they don't develop all that subtlety. That's what I love about jazz. There's so much subtlety in jazz. When you swing, you don't have to sing hard because the band is swinging hard behind you, and you can float over the top. I mean, Ella did that so beautifully.
Oh yeah, yeah, she did. You know, the vocal dynamics and, you know, for studio and live definitely change, along with players. You know, I find that a lot of times, like you say, you're trying to shoot for the back wall in the crowd, you know, so you're adding more expression and playing a little bit harder as a player, probably singing a little bit harder than we should just because we want volume half the time. And
there can be an over tendency. Yeah, exactly. There can be a tendency to oversing a little. You know, and sometimes when I first just start into a song and I haven't yet been on mic and I'm just kind of learning it, and I find once I get on mic, I go, oh my God, I'm over singing. I got to like back this up, get more breath into it, get more slide, get more flesh of the throat and the cheeks and the back of the throat into it. And then it starts to get really interesting. And you add between the what they call in painting the chiaroscuro, that you get the dark and the light of the voice. And who, you know, one singer who just does that amazingly well is Celine Dion. I mean, she just goes, some of the vowels you think would be really bright, she makes super dark. And so her singing is always so interesting. It's unexpected. You never quite know where she's going with it. And I just think she's an amazing vocalist.
Yeah, Celine Dion and Barbara Streisand, those two are the heavy hitters as far as vocal dynamics. And, you know, Barbara Streisand's song Evergreen is a perfect example of vocal dynamics. You know, she starts off, you know, soft, and towards the end of the song, I mean, she's out there, but it still stays balanced, and it gives you that punch in your chest when she sings, the way I, you know, analyze it. So, yeah,
Celine, absolutely.
You know, yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, your compositions, Gloria, I mean, do you have a team of writers and producers that you work with, and how do you guys usually approach songs if you're receiving a song to rewrite for somebody, or if it's your own composition for your own album?
Well, when Ted and I were just working, there are a couple things that come along. First of all, the feel. The feel of the song has got to feel right. Now, right now with the project Ted and I are doing, we're going with, I said, look, I want everything to have a motor. I don't even care if it's a ballad. I want it to have some kind of motor underneath it, even if it's a light bossa nova, whatever, you know. So right now we're working from a standpoint of, okay, what are the rhythms? Because the rhythms really define the project, if you think about it.
I agree.
That wasn't clear to me earlier in my life, but I had a wonderful collaborator. Right now I'm working with Ted. Ted plays everything. He plays keyboards, he plays guitar, he's got a full-out studio, he produces all the tracks. We're going to bring, like Gary Herbig, probably phenomenal sax player, in to put some sax stuff down. We just had Will Wheaton and Bridget and Peggy Blue in to do some backgrounds on some of the stuff. The way I work in writing a song, it can be one of two ways. It can be that the music is there first. I find that when the music is there first and I have to tailor the lyric to the music, my lyrics can often be more interesting, because now I really have to hone to a certain melody, and the note here is higher than the one after it, so that means I've got the word that sits there. The accent has got to be on the right syllable, you know.
Yes, yeah.
Nothing makes me crazier when I hear somebody who has written a song, and the song is really good, and then there's one word that the note and the accent of the syllable don't match.
Right.
And it's like, guys, come on, just, well, then change the note, do something. But sometimes the lyric comes first. When I was working, and you mentioned George Duke, and God, I love George.
Yes.
And he was my go-to choice after I had the hit with Friends and Lovers. And they said, who do you want to produce? I said, I want to work with George Duke, because I had loved what he did with Jeffrey Osborne. The work he had done with Jeffrey just put me on the floor. And so we did an album together called Full Moon, No Hesitation. And I had a hand in writing quite a lot of the material, but I collaborated with people, and it really was my first big foray into putting my stamp on the songs. Before that, I had sort of gotten more of the songs. I hadn't had the confidence in my own voice. And while I was in the midst of doing it, we had 10 songs picked, and I had a dream one night that there was an 11th song that was supposed to be the last song on the album. And I've forgotten exactly how that proceeded, but I decided that I was going to write a song about my father. And my dad was a great musician, a crazy man, you know, hookah-smoking, spaghetti-making musician who taught me to eat blue cheese and anchovies when I was 5, and just outrageous man. He was also an alcoholic. He had, you know, and there was stuff that went on in the household that was very unstable, etc. And I wanted to write this song kind of saying to him, I love you, here's the truth of it, and I love you, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
And I tried for weeks. I would sit down, and every line I came up with just sounded either angry or trite or stupid or, you know, predictable, or I mean, there were more wadded up pieces of paper all over the room than you could possibly imagine. But this is what sometimes happens with the music, with artists, with the art process, the creative process. You do all the preparation. And it was almost like I was putting down on paper all the things I couldn't say so that I would open the door to what could be said. And I was on an airplane, and my mind just wafted to the song, and suddenly the lines started coming. And they came line after line after line. I wanted you to be my hero. I saw the way we were as law. But I accepted consolation. And it went on and on and on. And the song wrote itself through me. I didn't even try to think of it. It thought me. And it came down line after line. So I stake my life on the music. I put my heart to the pen. And I try not to dance to the same old tune again and again and again. And with all that we've been through, I do love you.
Wow.
That's a song that that's a song lyric that I needed high-level divine intervention to write, because I look at that and it is so complex and rich. And I've actually had people tell me that they've played it at Al-Anon meetings, and you know, people have written me that they heard me sing that song and they went home and they cleaned up stuff with one of their own parents, because they saw that maybe we could just say, okay, we all did the best we could. Let's just get back to ground, you know, to start over again. But I don't know that had to come from a high inspiration place. So sometimes it comes like that. And sometimes you struggle and struggle. I remember writing a song called Heaven Knows, and I had the whole song done except for one line. And I was like there for 2 hours, and there was a certain rhyme, and there were only so many syllables, and the two halves of the line had to rhyme. Yeah. And I was like pulling my hair out because I'd set up this really complex rhyme, and I knew it. And I struggled for 2 hours, and I said, "Oh, screw it!" And I just said, "I'm going to go get a cappuccino." And I got in the car and I drove down the block. And I swear to you, it was like, you know, remember the old eight ball that you turn the eight ball up and the little words would pop up,
the
like
teller.
You know,
yeah,
exactly, the crazy eight ball. And the words just popped up in front of my eyes. All the words I'd been working on just were given to me. They just formulated themselves like little pieces of a puzzle coming together. And I had to pull over to the side of the road and write it down really fast. So, you know, I really do believe in divine intervention. You do the work, you do the preparation, and then you open yourself to something larger than just you coming through and hopefully showing up when you need it.
Definitely. I totally agree with you there. So, Gloria, tell me, what is on the musical agenda for 2010?
Well, as I said, I've got to start preparing for this symphony concert. Ted Perlman and I are doing these first three songs, actually four songs, with the special song I just wrote for this theme song, because it turned out so hot. We're going to include it. It's so much fun.
There you go.
And so we're going to do the four songs, and we've got a guy who is connected and said, I know with the four songs you've chosen and what I'm hearing, there's no doubt we'll go out and get an album deal and, you know, do another one. I mean, listen, I'm game. Obviously, Ted and I are working on it, and going to do some more writing. Robin and I talked about, he's got a couple songs that he started work on that he kind of put aside that I like. And I asked him if, I said, look, if you're not going to develop those, you want to give them to Mama, and, you know, we'll try it.
Hey, there you go.
So, you know, I'm still doing that, and I have a world premiere play that I'm going to do, I think, in February and March, and so lots of good stuff.
Wow. Yeah, definitely got your plate full, definitely.
Oh. Well, I like that. I like the challenges.
Yeah, it is, especially if it's music. You know, you're putting your mind to it, especially in the creative thought, even if it's, you know, outside of music with your acting background. I mean, you're still in that creative zone and focusing on delivering your art. So that's where it's
at. Well, and delivering your heart.
Yeah.
Delivering your heart. Delivering, whether it's through the spoken word. I mean, when you're in the zone and when it's right, you know, you make spoken words sing too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So
yeah.
You gotta do all the preparation and know what you're doing and bring your heart to it and then open yourself to the flow of it. I mean, it's really exciting. That's why, because then you never know what's going to happen. It's
true.
Always an improv. You
always
do all the hard work and preparation and then you just show up.
Yes,
it's like jazz. All of life is one big jazz riff, you know?
Man, that's how I live, one beat at a time.
There you go.
Well, Gloria, it's been totally inspirational speaking with you. It's, again, an honor. I would love to have you back and talk about your new endeavors. And
okay.
Chop it up with you again.
And well, thank you so much.
Oh, no, not a problem. Thank you. And best of luck to you and Robin and Ted and your whole camp for the musical future.
All right, and when we get the new stuff finished, we'll get a chance to talk about it, and we'll play some of it for you.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
Fun. All right, thanks so much, Spud. Say hi to Minneapolis for me.
Will do. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye.
And a big shout out to Miss Gloria Loren for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. You know, it was a real true honor for me. Speaking to Gloria, you know, she comes from a very diverse musical background. Her son, Robin Thicke, tremendous R&B artist, and Gloria herself, man, she's a phenomenal vocalist. Just to have that experience and that one-on-one time with her, I'm truly grateful, and a big thank you again to Gloria Loren. And for more information on Gloria, you need to hit her website up at www.GloriaLoring.com, and Loring spelled L-O-R-I-N-G, GloriaLoring.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up as well at www.SpudTooTight.blogspot.com. Again, SpudTooTight.blogspot.com. And I also host a podcast on iTunes. So if you have an iPhone or a computer, open up your iTunes player, go to the iTunes store and type in the Producer's Corner. Click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And for questions and suggestions, you can hit my email up, spudtootight@gmail.com. And for the remainder of the show, I'm going to play one of Gloria's classic timeless tunes, Friends and Lovers. And I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.
What would you think if I told you? Or the other.